Welcome to Scouts Out, an original science fiction story by A.A. Foringer, set in his Outfitters universe. All of the Outfitters universe stories are available in ebook format at smashwords.com. If you would like to support the author or read the story for yourself, please buy the book at smashwords.com.
Chapter 11. Leo looked at his watch. 16:30 hours. It had been an educational afternoon. After eating lunch, he had gone up to the cockpit and began his tutorial program once again with the rest of the crew. During the studies, he had occasionally looked up and studied the cockpit crew. They were a serious lot, at least while they were studying. They kept their noses in their screens, getting up occasionally to look at another screen on the bridge level or to get something to eat or drink. Leo got up from his chair and stretched. Yoshi, Kim, and Abraham looked up from their work. "Well, I think I'd better get down to my cabin to find out what the uniform is. My superior, Captain De Clooney, has ordered me to be in uniform for this evening's meeting." Abe spoke up. "Sir, I was looking up the uniform requirements earlier. There is only one requirement for the uniform. That is, you must wear a pink-colored shirt, lime-green pants, and boots, purple in color." Leo looked at Abe and did not believe a word he said due to the silly grin on his face. Leo decided to have a little fun at his expense, since he had started the little joke. "Is that a fact? Well, then I would like you to get into uniform and go show each member of the crew what they are expected to wear," warned Officer Gutenberg. Yoshi and Kim laughed out loud at the face Abe made after Leo gave his order. Then Leo laughed, and then Abe realized he was joking. Leo felt a seed of teamwork had just been planted by the jest. "Like I said earlier, I have a meeting with the commander. Yoshi, call everyone outside the ship when I call after my meeting. I'll brief you on what I find out and answer any questions anyone has." Yoshi nodded. "You got it, Cap." "Oh, and call Packer up and make sure he remembers to get the vehicle that I need." "You got it again, Cap." "Well then, I'm off to my cabin to get dressed for the ball." He got a few quizzical looks at that, and then he realized that even though they all spoke the same language, that didn't mean they all spoke the same language. Cinderella, the Glass Slipper, the Wicked Stepsisters. Still blank expressions. Leo thought about explaining it, but then decided to take too long and he had other things to do. "Look it up, guys, or better yet, watch the Walt Disney flick by the name Cinderella." "Oh yeah, Disney. I saw Snow White," Abe said. "Fine, you access it and I'll go change clothes." Leo walked away, shaking his head, wondering if the crew would ever be able to communicate fully, what with all the time period differences and the cultural differences. He guessed that maybe, eventually, things would begin to click together. He hoped. Leo climbed down the ladder to the crew deck. Looking around, he didn't see anyone. Well, it was a little early for chow, Leo guessed. He spoke into the air. "Larry, have you been listening in on what was talked about in the cockpit?" "Yes, Leo, I do have Cinderella on hand in the ship's library." "No, not that part of the conversation. The part about the uniform and me wearing one to the meeting with Captain De Clooney." "Oh, yes. What do you need to know about uniforms?" "Okay," Leo said, rolling his eyes. "What uniform do I wear to see De Clooney?" "Well, the rules have not been clearly established as of yet, but I would suggest a standard duty uniform, which consists of a combination of black pants, black button-up shirt, and combat boots." "Okay, Larry, where do I get them?" "They can be made in your size by the replicator slot. If you would like me to, I can replicate them now for you." "Please do." The replicator made its typical hum, a little bit longer this time than it did for food. Leo looked at the slot and pulled the clothes out. They still felt a little warm like they had just been ironed, and Leo loved the feel of freshly ironed clothes. He went to his room, stripped down, and hopped into the sonic shower. A truly new experience. Water was hard to replicate, as Larry explained, and the sonic waves cleaned the body better. Leo didn't know if that was true, but it sure made your skin tingle, and it didn't drip when he got out. Leo reached for the clothes and started putting them on. Once fully dressed, he walked around, noting the feel of the clothes, comfortable, and comfortable boots as well. Checking himself in the mirror, he realized he needed a haircut. He had been putting it off for about a week now, and Leo caught himself. 100 years in a week or so, maybe he would let his hair grow long. Leo looked at the mirror one last time and decided his shave from this morning would do. He put his comm link back on, then he picked up his comm panel and went out the door. A few of the guys had begun to gather in the mess area. Gutenberg started to stand up and go to the position of attention, but caught himself and sat back down. Gonzalez was sitting at the table and turned and looked at Leo and gave a low whistle. "Looking good, Jefe," he said with a smile. "Thank you. Thank you very much. and what is everyone having tonight? Chili, Captain. Do you want me to get you some? The man started to rise as he asked. Leo waved him to sit down. I can get it by myself. Thanks for the offer, though. Grabbing his food, he sat down at the same table as Yoshi, Pablo Verde, and Fernucci and dug in. Yoshi, where is everyone else at? Leo asked, between bites. Yoshi had just finished a piece of bread and was working on a second slice. Well, I do believe that Kim is still up at the bridge, working on his tutorial program. Packer is down with Ranger Fundakowski getting out the cycle for your trip. His partner Logan is eating his room. Flavius and Fiagata are eating down the engine room. What are your plans for this evening, Pablo? Fanucci? Leo asked, trying to include them in the conversation. I really had not thought about it, sir. Study, I suppose. Pablo just shrugged with his mouth full. Someday, Pablo, I'll be able to get you to keep your answers short and to the point. Leo turned back to Yoshi. Well, my good first mate, why don't we kill the studies for the evening and have the crew play some sort of sport or something while I'm at the meeting? Any sport you would like to suggest, Leo? Yoshi asked. Well, I don't know if we have the equipment, but we could try volleyball. It's pretty easy to teach and doesn't take that much room or time for a decent game. Yoshi mulled this over for a minute while eating and chewing. Well, we got enough people, with six on each side, not including you, that is. I'll give it a try. Hitting his comm link, Yoshi asked, Larry, do we have the equipment on board or the ability to make volleyball equipment? Why, certainly. I can make the necessary equipment. The poles will have to be made in the lower deck replicating bin to make them the proper height. Great, Yoshi said. Get on it and have them ready to go in a few minutes. Roger, first mate. Leo loved volleyball. It's probably the only team sport that he's probably slightly above average in. At least he thought so. Leo got temporarily engrossed in his meal when he found a particularly large bean that was bigger than some pieces of meat. When he looked up again, he caught Yoshi explaining the points of the game to Flavius and Pablo. Okay, now, for the last time, there is no contact with the other team. Each team stays on their side of the net and hits the ball back and forth over the net. Now then, why do you get to do that? Asked Flavius. To score a point. Wait a second, you said you hit the ball back and when it hit the ground, your team got to serve, Pablo commented. Listening to the conversation for a few minutes, Leo learned Pablo was not very articulate, but he caught on to things quickly, whereas Fernucci was very eloquent but did not catch on all that quick. Fernucci seemed to be getting more confused. I thought that when you hit the ball in, then you got a point. It seemed that Pablo had caught on the basic points and wanted to clarify some others. Well, what about this rotating thing? When do you do that again? Leo was learning something about Yoshi, too. He was not a very good teacher. He explained the game well enough, but he had not taken into account the people that he was talking to had never even heard of the game before, let alone seen a volleyball court. Leo was going to have to watch out for misunderstandings if Yoshi assumed too much when he told someone to do something. Leo looked at his watch. 17:15. He had better start moving down the ramp. Leo hated to leave. It looked as though Yoshi was about to start explaining scoring and serving to Fanucci again, and at the same time trying to explain rotation to Pablo, using three cups from the dinner meal. Leo gathered up the plate and silverware and placed them in the cleaning slot and headed down the ladder. Leo got to the bottom level and walked down the ramp looking for Packer. He walked out to the front of the ship and expected Packer to be there. He wasn't. Leo looked underneath the back of the ship and didn't see him there either. Then Leo heard a high-pitched hum and turned back towards the front of the ship and saw something moving towards him at an incredible rate of speed. As the object got closer, Leo made out Packer on a motorcycle-type machine. Packer approached and slowed the vehicle considerably. It looked like a bike, except it didn't have wheels. He coasted to a stop about 2 feet from Leo. Then he reached up and hit a switch. The humming slowed down, and two legs came down, and the back end of the vehicle planted itself, while the front end went up. Packer gave his big old grin and jumped off the bike. "You're mount, Leo," Packer said, giving a bit of flourish with his hands. Leo looked at the bike closer. It had a pair of handlebars with a series of levers and a few switches near the center. There were two sets of foot pegs on each side of the bike. The bike was a sort of green, dull color with black handles and switches. Leo looked back at Packer, who was smiling, as always, then looked at his watch. 17:20. "Well, how do I get this thing moving, Lieutenant Packer? And tell me, how fast does it go?" as he reached over and made indentations in the soft leather seat with his finger. "Well, first of all, do you have your comm panel with you?" "Yes, I do," Leo answered, fishing out from his pouch. Leo handed it over to Packer, who reached over to the cycle and removed a comm panel that was centered on the bike handlebars. He then placed Leo's comm panel in the cradle and snapped it into place. Packer then motioned Leo to get on the bike. Leo straddled it and put his hands on the handlebars. "Now then, You turn on the bike with this switch here, and since you have a comm panel, the next thing you do is activate the comm panel. Flipping the switch, the bike started to hum, and the back end rose slowly off the ground until both the front end and the back end were level, and Leo could stand flat-footed while straddling the bike. Leo sat down gently on the seat, and the bike bounced slightly and swayed a bit, but calmed down almost immediately. Leo nodded as Packer turned on the comm panel. The comm panel lit up with a menu: manual, auto, route, and destination. Leo looked at the screen, then looked at Packer. "Does it take voice commands?" Leo asked. "Sure does, Leo. Why do you ask?" "Well, to tell you the truth, I really don't know where I'm going for this meeting." "Well, sir, this box can get hooked into the net ship and receive directions from it," Packer explained. Leo nodded, figuring out that for this meeting, he should be on time. Leo looked at the screen again and reached for the handlebars and then over at Packer. "Okay, which makes this thing stop and which makes this thing go?" "Well, this one you roll back," Packer motioned to the handle on the right. "And this one lets you change the altitude up to 4 feet off the ground," Packer said, motioning towards the left handle. "And these buttons on either side of the handlebar control your braking." Pretty simple, Leo thought. He reached up to the handle and rolled it back. The next thing Leo knew, he was sitting on his butt and the cycle had shot out about 10 feet from underneath him. Laughter came from above and behind. "Whoa, Captain, those controls are a bit sensitive." Leo laid his head back on the ground and looked at the underside of the ship. "Now he tells me." Leo watched Packer walk over past him and wrestled the bike back into its kickstand. Leo sat up as Packer began to look over the bike. "Anything broke, wild man?" Packer looked it over for a few seconds and turned back towards Leo. "Not this time. Just try and be more careful next time. I don't know how to fix one of these things yet." "Well, maybe you do and you just don't know about it yet." "Huh?" Packer said, looking at him a bit puzzled. "Nothing," Leo said, thinking that maybe Packer hadn't already figured out that there were all kinds of information in his brain that he did not know about yet. Leo got up and walked over to the cycle, now a bit more aware and definitely more respectful of the machine. Leo straddled the machine again, activated it so it leveled out. This time he reached for the handlebars and very gently twisted the handle. The cycle moved ahead slowly this time. Leo gave it a little more twist and the bike moved steadily. He slowly increased the power and made a wide circle around the ship. Coming back to where Packer was standing, Leo gently eased the brake control and stopped in front of the frontiersman. "Handles real smooth." "Yeah, wait till you get up to a good speed," Packer said with a big old grin. "Okay, now to figure out where I'm going," Leo said, looking at his watch. "Well, I figure we'll just ask Larry." "Okay, here goes." Leo reached down to his comm link and flicked it on. "Larry, can you feed into my cycle the directions to the ship where Captain DeClooney is?" The computer's neutral voice came over Leary's earpiece. "Well, Captain Grant, I can get you there two ways, either with full automation of the cycle." Leo shook his head quickly. "Nah, I need to learn how to run one of these things. Or I can give you the directional arrow on the comm panel," the voice continued. "That sounds like the way to go, Larry. Give me that arrow," Leo stated. An arrow quickly appeared on the screen with the number 2020M below it. "I take it that is in meters, Larry?" Leo asked, with Packer nodding his head in agreement with the guess. "That is affirmative, Captain Grant." Leo looked at his watch. 1740. "Well, guys, I guess I'd better get moving. Don't want to be late for my meeting." Leo reached over and gently rolled his grip on the handlebar towards him. "Take it easy, Leo, and remember how sensitive that machine is," Packer yelled as Leo pulled away. Leo turned the bike when he got away from the ship and lined the front of the bike with the direction of the arrow and revved the cycle a bit more and headed up the hill away from the ship. Leo thought of something and called out to Larry. "Larry, are you going to give me an arrow back to the ship when the meeting is over?" "Of course, sir. It would not do for you to be wandering around in the dark. After all, you need your rest while in training. Your being lost would be counterproductive." "Okay, just checking to make sure." He then gunned the cycle some more and rose another foot off the ground and started to really fly. He looked down at the arrow to make sure he was headed in the right direction and corrected his alignment slightly. He checked the numbers. 1,700 meters to go. He began to feel pretty confident in his ability, so he began to look around. He was traveling on the top of a ridge that sloped away from him gently on either side. He was passing other depressions similar to the one his ship was in. In each bowl were ships of the same design as his. Leo realized he was seeing some of the other recon ships that were part of his squadron, and his being the 12th ship of 15. Leo looked around at the other ships as he passed them and felt a bit of pride in his own ship. No real reason. He knew all the ships were probably exactly similar to his, but his was his, and he belonged to it as well. Sort of hard to explain, really. Leo opened the throttle up the whole way and felt the air whip past him. He looked at the gauge and read the numerals. 1,200, 950, 500. Leo looked up at the direction he was going and made out a ship in another depression in the ground ahead. The ship was longer than it was wider, and about half as tall as it was long. It was probably about 10 times longer than his own ship. Leo could make out the landing bay. which could probably accept his ship for maintenance, he surmised. Along the top of the ship was a raised area that Leo guessed was the bridge. There's one thing he noticed also. The ship had no landing gear. Leo's ship sat on landing gear that clearly retracted, but this ship was sitting on what appeared to be concrete platforms with what looked like support beams holding the ship off the ground. This ship was obviously not meant to make landings on a planet's surface, and once it got into space, it was there to stay. Leo was edging up closer to the port side of the ship and eased back on the throttle. Leo started looking around for a porthole or something to gain access to the ship. He saw a few people around what appeared to be an elevator shaft about midway along the ship. Leo pulled up to the elevator door and parked his bike next to several other bikes that were parked nearby. Leo grabbed his comm panel off the bike, and while putting the bike on his kickstand, Leo stuffed the comm panel back in his pouch, straightened out his shirt, and walked over to the elevator. By the time he got to the elevator door, there was only one person at the door, a skinny guy in the same uniform as Leo with a comm panel. The guy looked up at Leo and smiled and said, "Name, please, sir." "Leo." "Leo Grant." "Rank and ship, please." "Ah, Captain." "Junior grade. Recon ship 1215. Second squadron," Leo replied. The guy fiddled with his comm panel for a second, and Leo caught a glimpse of his own picture on the screen. "Very well, sir, you may enter. The elevator will take you up to the repair deck where Captain DeClooney and the others are assembling." As he said this, the elevator door opened. "Thank you," Leo said as he moved into the elevator. Once inside the elevator, the doors closed behind him, and Leo could feel the elevator begin to move upward. Leo tried to straighten out his shirt again, although it still seemed to be in place, and then he looked down at the pants to make sure there was no dirt on him. He ran his fingers through his hair, nervously wishing he had a mirror, so he could check himself out. As soon as he started to look at his boots for dirt, the door opened. The repair deck was easily about twice as high as his own ship, and would probably fit seven of his ships here, end-to-end, with some room left over. He was standing about midway from either end of the ship. He could see both ends of the ship as well, the evening sky through the huge open doors at either end. Leo looked around and saw his group. It was sort of a relief to see the guys he had first met when he came out of his room again. They were all dressed in the same uniform as he was. They were all looking around the hangar, inspecting it, and talking excitedly to each other. Leo spotted Terry, Jackie, and Clarence together again, and headed for them. After exchanging greetings, they talked for a few minutes about their ship. After a few minutes, Lieutenant Farlow arrived and organized them into a formation of two ranks and announced that the senior captain would be along shortly. The door to the elevator sprang open about 2 minutes later, and out stepped Senior Captain DeClooney. Stepped out was not the correct word, Leo thought. It was more like he marched. Captain DeClooney walked quickly, gracefully, and confidently until he was exactly 3 paces in front of the formation centered on it exactly. He then took out his comm panel and pressed a button and looked at the screen and looked up. "Avazzini?" DeClooney called out. A short pause. "Captain Avazzini," DeClooney called out again. Still there was no response, and after another short pause. "Captain Antonio Avazzini, please respond by saying here," DeClooney said with a bit of edge to his voice. A voice behind Leo said, "Here, sir." Leo didn't turn around to look who said it. He just watched DeClooney. "Bernard," DeClooney stated. "Here, sir," another voice called out from the line Leo was in. And so it went, 15 names in all, and when it came to be Leo's turn, he responded, "Here, sir," as well. DeClooney looked up from his comm panel after the last "here" was called, and he looked around at the formation in front of him and seemed to stare at each person intently. "Well, here we are, the eyes and ears of the squadron. You gentlemen are going to be the greatest group of observers, scouts, advance guards, infiltrators, and operatives that this or any other military organization in the history of mankind has ever seen. Our job is to forewarn and appraise the fleet of what lies ahead and around it. You gentlemen are to be independent thinkers and exercise judgment that is uncommon for people of your rank, experience, and age. And since you have great responsibility, I require much from you." DeClooney paused and looked around at the men. "What lies before is a great adventure, a great war to which our names will be remembered with honor and glory for saving our home world. But before this happens, we have to train and become what God intended. The meanest, the most ferocious, the most uncanny foe the Horde has ever faced. We must be willing and able to take the battle to the enemy." DeClooney paused and smiled ferociously. "Over the next months, we will prepare, as will the rest of the fleet. Prepare to fight, prepare to win. Then, when we are ready, we will set sail towards home and glory." DeClooney whipped around and walked a few paces towards the room that Lieutenant Farlow had motioned towards earlier, then turned around again. "Gentlemen, if you would please follow me into the conference room, I will begin to brief you all in more detail about what lies before us." Leo stood there for a minute, along with everyone else. Well, people, let's move it along. The senior captain doesn't have all day, came the commanding voice of Lieutenant Farlow from behind the formation. Leo moved along with the crowd, following the figure of de Clooney down a hallway and into a large room that sloped towards the front with tables and chairs on terrace levels surrounding the center. The rest of the captains started to file into the seats, and Leo found himself in the middle of the room. De Clooney stood at attention behind the podium, ramrod straight, watching the personnel taking their seats. Lieutenant Farlow stood beside him, talking in low, hushed tones, both to the captain and into his comlink. Leo sat down in the chair closest to him and found himself next to the gentleman who had been a taxi driver from South Africa. He nodded to him, and the large man nodded back. Leo looked ahead to the podium and de Clooney, who was beginning to tap his fingers on the podium while watching the men. Leo looked around and saw the last man sit down, and the room settled down both in noise and motion. De Clooney tapped something on the podium, and the room got even quieter. Now then, gentlemen, I will start with a more detailed briefing of our mission and proceed with synopsis on the training schedule for the next 2 months. Then at the end, I will provide you with a detailed code of conduct, which I demand that you enforce with your crews. You are to study the code of conduct, ensure that your men learn it as well, and implement it on your ship, de Clooney stated. Over the next hour and a half, de Clooney showed them diagrams and charts and formations the reconnaissance ships would use when working with the fleet. He also showed them training schedules, the hours they need to spend working with their crews, the important drills they would have to learn, the procedures for receiving repairs when their ships were damaged. Gentlemen, you all see the work cut out for you. I will be periodically visiting your ships and calling you for updates. We will also be meeting at least once a week in this same room. One last thing, de Clooney paused. Some of us may not ever make it home. Some of us will die fighting to save the Earth we once knew. So in order to remind us all of the severity of the situation we will be facing, everyone is to begin wearing sidearms at all times. Any man not found wearing a sidearm away from his ship or while in uniform will receive 10 lashes. This policy goes into effect tomorrow morning. Wait a minute, you mean that you will inflict 10 lashes on everyone not wearing a weapon? The tall black African stood up and shouted. Not me, Captain Livingston. Us. This is fleet policy, and I will enforce fleet policy, and so shall you if you wish to remain a captain of your own ship, de Clooney stated in a calm tone. That policy is barbaric and uncivilized, and I will not participate in it, stated the tall African. De Clooney got a mean gleam in his eye and stared directly at Captain Livingston. Captain, what do you suggest I, then he glanced around the room, we do in order to enforce discipline? None of us are getting paid, so we cannot take money away. We cannot afford to throw people out of the fleet, even though they can leave the fleet at any time they want and strike out on their own. We do have other punishments, bread and water, restriction, hard labor, and the like. But gentlemen, and de Clooney looked around the room, I don't know whether you know anything about war, and make no mistake, this is a war. But in a war, an army, or a fleet, de Clooney said, motioning around the room once again, there have to be rules, and they have to be enforced. And harsh punishment gets quick results. So even though it offends your delicate sensibilities, these are the rules, and you and I will enforce them at all times. The tall African looked around at the other captains in the room, and then looked back at Captain de Clooney. Sir, I will have to think about this, and I will get back with you. But I still think that this practice of corporal punishment is barbaric and animalistic. De Clooney looked back at him. That's probably true, and I sympathize with you. But drastic times call for drastic measures. If you wish, we can talk later. But as for now, all rules and their subsequent punishments are available in your ship's library. Educate yourself with the code, and ensure your crew knows them as well. If you have any questions, please call me. And if I am not available, then contact Lieutenant Farlow. Is that all? He paused and looked around the room. Dismissed. Captain Livingston was the first person out of his seat, and was also the first person out the door. Leo and the rest of the captains got up and shuffled out. They each passed Lieutenant Farlow on their way out of the room, who nodded and said goodnight to each of them. Leo was lost in his own thoughts, mostly about the corporal punishment aspect that had been revealed, and he did not notice that he had missed the turn to the elevator that everyone else had taken. Leo looked up and realized that he did not have the foggiest idea where he was. Leo had somehow ended up in one of the alcoves of the main hangar bay in what looked like a mechanic shop. Leo was about to activate his comlink and ask Larry how the heck to get out of the ship. He heard a door open. Turning around, he saw the first female he had seen since he had woken up. She was blonde, a little shorter than Leo, and apparently had a very healthy body from the apparent curves that were revealed from her black cloth jumpsuit she was wearing. Leo gave a little cough and started to walk towards the female to ask her directions. The female looked up from her comm panel and stared at him with a bit of surprise. "May I ask who you are and what are you doing here in my bay?" she said with a bit of an English accent, or maybe Australian, Leo thought. "Ah, yeah, I'm Leo, Captain Leo Grant, Recon Ship 12, and I appear to be lost. Can you tell me how to get out of this area and back to the outside? Leo smiled as he said this, getting a better look at the girl. Recon Ship 12, huh? Well, Captain, I'm glad to meet you, and hope that you can navigate your ship better than this, or else when you fly in here for repairs, you're going to be a problem. The female started with a slight bit of ridicule, but also with a smile. Excuse me, when I bring my ship in here for repairs, what would you know about that? Leo asked, a bit annoyed. Well, I'm the senior technician for all recon ships in the squadron. My name is Chief Warrant Officer 3, Westlock. And when and if you ever bring your ship into this bay, she motioned her arms along the whole bay, I'll be in charge of putting it back together again so you can continue your mission, Chief Westlock voiced, looking directly at Leo. Leo looked back at her and made a split-second decision that seemed to be the best one at the time and would later provide to be very wise. Leo extended his hand and said, Glad to meet you, Chief. If you ever need anything, give me a call. Leo said the last part in the friendliest tone he had, and with as much innocence as possible, hoping that she would not take it the wrong way. She looked at Leo and extended her own hand as well and shook. Leo noted her hand was soft, but there was strength behind it. Well, Captain, since you seem to be a nice guy, I'll lead you to the elevator and help you get out of this ship and back to your own, Westlock said with a nice smile. She took him by the arm and started to lead him to the elevator. On the way down to Leo's bike, Westlock told him something about herself, like her first name was Faith, and she was originally from Australia, third generation descended from the convicts. Leo shared with her some of his story. She laughed at his comments thrown into the story. When they had gotten down to his bike, Faith said goodnight, and Leo said he would look her up the next time he was here. She responded with a noncommittal, okay, and went back to the elevator. Leo watched her go and smiled to himself as he got his bike ready to go. There was no one else in the area, and he pulled away a little faster than he should have and almost tipped over. As Leo passed the crest of the bowls surrounding the ship, he noticed a large campfire in front of his. Shoot, I forgot to call Yoshida and tell him to have the crew standing by when I got back, like I told him to, he said to himself. There were several figures around the fire, some in chairs, some squatting on the ground, and some standing. Leo parked the bike underneath the ship near the ramp and started to walk towards the campfire. As he was passing the ramp, he heard someone coming down it and turned to see who it was. It was Pablo, carrying a tray of drinks. Hello, Pablo. What do you have there? Well, sir, I have mugs of hot chocolate for Lieutenant Burgeye and Lieutenant Kim, and a few mugs of coffee for some of the other folks. Well, let's not stand here letting them get cold. Let's deliver them to everyone. Leo and Pablo advanced toward the fire. When they got closer, Yoshi stood up and grabbed his hot chocolate off the tray, and everyone else grabbed for their drinks as well. Pablo grabbed the last drink off the tray and then leaned it up against one of the chairs. Leo looked around at the fire and realized that not all the crew were here. Leo moved next to Yoshi and squatted on the ground next to him. How did your big meeting go, El Capitan? Yoshi asked. Everyone around the fire was looking at him, waiting for a response. Leo looked around and decided that he could not tell some of the crew what was in store for them and not the others, especially the part about the floggings. But there was something he knew might be of interest to them. Well, crew, I met a very nice blonde-haired young lady in our command ship. There was an immediate and audible sound of curiosity among the assembled group. The first to speak up was Fiyagata. Was she cute? Well, yes. Yes, she was. And Fia, I hope that does not distract you. Why do you say that, Grant? Fiyagata said, with a bit of annoyance in his voice. His face in the firelight looked like it was frowning. Leo smiled, because when and if this ship docks in the command ship, she will be in charge of all the repairs to this ship made by the mechanics. I ain't taking orders from a woman, especially a woman mechanic, Captain, Fiyagata said. Leo foresaw a problem, but he did not know how to deal with it right now, so he decided to put it on the back burner. Okay, Chief, we will cross that bridge when we come to it, Leo said, hoping the problem would resolve itself with time. Well, Cap, Yoshi piped in, what else did you find out? Leo turned back to face him. Well, a bunch of other things that I shall put out in the morning, at breakfast. Oh, and by the way, don't let anyone leave the ship tomorrow until I speak to them. Yoshi nodded and made a quick announcement over his comlink. After he finished, he gave Leo a quizzical look. Leo just gave him a small shake of his head, deciding to discuss the whole situation with them later and help them decide how to best tell the crew about the rules and possible punishments. So what is going on around here, first mate? Well, sir, we were able to play a few games of volleyball after everyone caught on to the rules. Winchester was the line judge, which was nice. No fights over line calls, Yoshi said with a smile. And then we decided to take it easy, so Packer replicated the wood and we started this fire. Where is everyone else? And did everyone play volleyball? Well, some of the guys decided to turn in early. And the only person who did not play volleyball was the Tech Flavius, Yoshi stated. Did he all know that you were playing volleyball? Fia answered, yes, he did. In fact, when the first mate made the announcement, we were standing side by side. That Flavius is a very strange one. All he does is sit and study. I try and talk to him, and all he does is mumble. That guy is very odd. Well, odd or not, Chief, get used to him. I want you to try and pull him out of his shell, okay? The Chief looked back at him and mumbled something under his breath. Lear did not want to pursue it. Best to let sleeping dogs lie, and maybe things would work out on their own. Well, Yoshi and I have some regulations to review, so I guess I'd better turn in. Good night, everyone. See you first thing in the morning. Oh, and would the last man out make sure the fire is out? Leo said, standing up and motioning for Yoshida to follow him. Leo heard a chorus of goodnights and a Buenas noches from Pablo specifically. Leo waved goodnight, and Yoshi got up and followed him up into the ship. When they got into their cabin, Leo sat down in his bunk and Yoshi in the chair behind the desk. Leo took off his boots and socks and threw them into the corner, then laid back on the bunk, putting his feet up on the underside of Yoshi's bed. Yoshi sat there patiently, waiting for Leo to get comfortable. Leo was glad that Yoshi was patient because he did not know where or how to begin. Leo stared back at his feet for a minute, then began, "Well, to tell you the truth, I did not know what to expect when I went over there tonight. So I guess when you have no expectations going into something, then you don't get surprised." "Well, I was a bit surprised anyways." Leo looked over at Yoshi, who sat patiently waiting. "Well, let me just say straight out, if one of our crews breaks one of the rules of the fleet, then he could be sentenced to his corporal punishment, with one of those methods being flogging." Yoshi showed a bit of surprise by sitting on the edge of his seat and opening his mouth, as if to say something, then recovered quickly and closing it, sitting back. "One of the offenses that involves flogging is not wearing a sidearm at all times. That is why I did not want anyone to leave the ship tomorrow until after I briefed them." "I see. I'm glad you made me make the announcement," Yoshi said. "I see some logic behind the punishment, although I'm going to try my best not to let any of the crew ever be flogged. To that end, I want all the officers very familiar with the rules of the fleet, and I will brief the enlisted crew members on all the rules involving punishment by flogging. So I will be studying the rules tonight to prepare an overview of what to tell everyone." Yoshi pondered this for a moment, turned on his monitor, and flicked through the couple of screens. He then looked up at Leo. "Well, Captain, a majority of the guys will probably not give you any trouble at all. Some of them are from periods in history that public floggings were still common, or had been phased out while their grandparents were still alive." "Well, that is all right, but it still does not make me feel any better about it." "I agree, Leo, but this is a very serious situation. I mean, it is a war, and I myself have never been in a war, and frankly, I am scared to death." "Yeah, me too," Leo sighed, smiled nervously at his first mate, who smiled back. "Well, let me show you some other things that I learned tonight that are not nearly so disturbing. They just mean a lot of work if we are going to get them all done." Leo then proceeded to give a brief overview of the lecture De Clooney had given. Leo let the schedules and the charts speak for themselves. Yoshi made some comments, and they talked some about the schedules and the training. Leo was looking forward to most of it, and the portions he was not too crazy about, Yoshi seemed to get excited about. They finished in about an hour, and Yoshi started to get ready for bed. Leo studied some law in college, but this was different. There was no case present, just rules with the punishment alongside them. Also listed were provisions for court-martials and other types of hearings. But Leo noted there were no lawyers in the fleet to complicate things, just plain ordinary members of the fleet, and the judge was always selected for having no vested interest in the case. Leo also noted the capital punishment was also available in such cases as treason, rape, murder, and other serious crimes. There's one phrase that did catch Leo's eye. The phrase read in legal terms that the commanding officer had the final say in disposition of all cases. Leo liked the ring of that, and the fact that it followed every penal article gave him as a commander a lot of discretion in handing out sentences. Leo pulled a few articles out of the computer and placed them into his briefing file, ready to be pulled up on his comm panel. Leo turned off his monitor and looked around the cabin. Yoshi had fallen asleep a while ago with the lights on, so Leo dimmed them where he was sitting, then got up and walked out of the room. Climbing the ladder up to the bridge deck, he discovered Winchester standing behind the bridge, looking out the front window. As Leo approached, Winchester turned his head in a half circle so that his head was facing Leo and his body was still facing forward. "Good evening, Leo. I had thought that everyone in the crew had gone to sleep." "Not just yet, my good man. I just finished up some work and wanted to check the ship out before I turned in for the night." "Well, sir, Larry and I locked down the ship about an hour ago. All external hatches are secured, and a full scan of the interior was conducted, and no intruders were detected at that time. Presently, Larry is doing a continuous scan of the area within 200 meters of the ship." "And what made you initiate those procedures?" Leo asked. "It is fleet standard operating procedure, and since you left no orders to the contrary, we decided to follow through with them. If you wish us to stop, we will do so," Winchester asserted. "Oh no, I guess I'd better get up on fleet operating procedure, that's all. Is there anything else you need, Leo?" the voice of Larry said, coming from the speaker located directly overhead. "Well, now that you mention it, tomorrow we will need to issue out weapons, and I don't know a thing about them. Could you please get the tutorial programs ready to run, and don't issue any weapons out until the individual programs have been run? I don't want anyone shooting themselves in the foot by accident." The voice of Larry and Winchester chimed in simultaneously. "Roger, Captain." "Well, good night, fellows. Alert me if you need me for anything." "Good night, Leo," Larry said. "Good night, Captain," Winchester said. Leo worked his way back down to the crew deck and went to bed as quietly as possible, trying not to disturb his first mate. Chapter 12. Hot. Real hot. Don't know if I'm gonna make it. Leo continued to put one foot in front of the other in rhythm with everyone else. They had gone about 6 miles already, and it did not look like Yoshi had any intention of turning around soon. They continued to run. Leo thought about how much had gone on these last 4 months. The learning, the training. The learning had been easy. Sit behind a screen, let the program run. All the information the outfitters had put into your brain would rise to the surface, and then you would know the information, and know that you knew it. The training, that was the hard part. First there were the drills, endless drills, like how to bring the ship to a point where it's ready to take off. Emergency takeoffs, regular takeoffs, semi-stealth mode takeoffs, not to mention the 1,001 drills that were needed just to get ready to move into space. Then there was the personal training, weapons, survival techniques, rappelling, martial arts, even parachute training. When some of the guys had questioned some aspects, they were told it was all part of the program the outfitters had laid out. There was some grumbling, like before the first parachute jump, but after a while, the crew just buckled down and did their best. Even though some of the training had been fun, and Leo loved doing most of it, he was very much looking forward to the move into space. His ship was scheduled to launch in 2 days. That is why Yoshi had suggested his last crew run. It might be a long time before the whole crew would be able to run together again. The crew had grown together as the training had gone on. There had been some problems. Logan Mansfield had stayed a loner. Chief Tuatelli seemed to dislike everyone, and sometimes picked on Flavius unmercifully. That is until Fundakowski had started to pick on Flavius. Then Tuatelli had started to ride Fundakowski about his looks, his shortness, and anything else that Tuatelli could think of. Fundakowski had stopped riding Flavius at that point, at least when Tuatelli was around. Everyone else had been more or less friendly. There were arguments, and Leo thought that a few blows had been exchanged, but he never heard about them directly. He did see a few black eyes and noticed people moving with some unexplained stiffness. Leo did not ask and did not really want to know as long as the training was getting done. The only time he raised a figurative eyebrow was when Yoshida had come back from a trip under the ship with Chief Tuatelli. Leo heard them head down the ramp one evening after a quiet argument about how a simulated cold engine startup had gone. About a half an hour later, Leo saw them come back into the crew deck and sit down and drink a couple of beers. Leo had gone under the ship with Tuatelli once himself. It had been the hardest thing he had to do since he woke up. It came about during one of the endless drills, this one wearing environmental suits, involving an emergency shutdown of all systems because of the possible meltdown of the engine core, coupled with a simulated hull breach. During the course of the drill, Leo had called Tuatelli, who was supposed to respond immediately. He had to wait 2 minutes for the callback. Then, when he had finally talked to him, Tuatelli's helmet was off. Leo had asked him about why he was not wearing it, and Tuatelli stated because he did not feel like it. That is when Leo had told him to meet him in the cabin after the drill. About an hour after taking off the environmental suits and ending the drill, Leo went to his cabin and called the chief engineer. When he got there, the engineer just stood in the doorway, looking surly. Leo decided they had had enough of the chief's attitude. He motioned for him to follow him without saying a word. They went underneath the ship towards the engines. "We have a problem, chief," Leo stated. "I have no problem. You do, with these stupid drills and wanting everything just so," the chief engineer spat back. "Oh, so I do. Let me ask you something. When Pablo fixed his gun turret, and a day later it broke because he did not do something that you told him to do, who had the problem?" Fia pondered this for a moment and nodded. "Now you see where I'm coming from. When someone screws up during a drill like you did, there is a problem. Also, you are one of my officers. I need your support, or at least your cooperation, in order to run the ship." Fia started to say something, but Leo held up his hand to silence him. "Now then, as you may have guessed, I am a pretty laid-back guy about certain things. I don't stand on formality, and I am very slow to anger. But you have done it. I want you to stay with the ship. I need you, and the ship needs you. But this attitude has got to end. It's got to end now." Leo said this part with both anger and fear. Anger about his authority being undermined almost continually, and fearful of the huge man at the same time. "Let me make you a deal, Captain. Let us go around. Then afterwards we'll talk some more," Fia said, raising his fists in a classic boxer stance. Leo decided that this was an invitation to make his move. Not wasting any time, he dropped down, swinging his left foot out as he did, attempting to sweep the big man's legs out from under him. Fia was caught off guard, but Leo's aim was either a bit off or the man had rooted himself to the ground because Leo's kick had no effect on him. Fia quickly stepped in towards him and threw a flurry of punches, with only one finding its mark on his shoulder as Leo rolled away to the left. Once away from the huge Samoan, Leo popped back up to his feet, but by this time the engineer was all over him. Leo tried to fend him off, but Fia had grabbed him by the shirt and was raining down some earth-shattering blows on Leo. That was the last thing Leo remembered. The next thing he knew, Fia was holding him up, saying, "Wake up, Captain. Hey, Captain, wake up." Leo shook his head and looked around and realized he had only been out a few seconds because Fia was still sweating and panting a bit. Leo slowly got to his feet with some help from Fia. When Leo was standing without assistance, Fia stood in front of him. "Okay, Cap, you are the man in charge, but you have to do one more thing before we go back on board." Leo was a bit shocked about the sudden turnaround. Okay, unsure what he wanted, but with the sudden change in attitude, Leo was not going to disagree with the man. "Well, you're going to have a nice bruise, but I need something to show as well. Give me a black eye. It don't matter which one, just make it quick." Leo started to say something and quickly changed his mind, not wanting the big man to change his. So without thinking further about it, he hauled back and planted a good solid right one onto Simone's face. The man was rock solid. His head snapped back slightly, but other than that, there was no movement from him. Fia looked down at Leo and shook his head, reached up and touched his eye tenderly. "That was going to be a good one, eh?" "Yeah, it sure is. Let's get on board and get some ice on it." They then went inside and got some cold packs, a couple of beers, and sat down in the crew lounge, talking for a couple of hours about the ship's engines, women, and the beer. Leo learned a lot about Fia that night, and something about being a leader, that his crew was looking to him, not because he was a great guy, not because he was smarter. Yoshida probably had him beat in the IQ department. And not because he was the best fighter, Fia had proven that very easily, but because he was the captain, and that meant they looked to him in this confusing place and time. It didn't matter, they did not feel like a leader all the time. In fact, not a lot of the time. He was the guy they looked to. Fia looked towards him now because he had stood up to him. Yoshida, because Leo was better with people. Why the other guys followed him, he's still not sure, but they did, and he had to lead them the best he could. Leo had never been much of a leader, he thought. He had been on the track team, wrestling and soccer teams in high school, but had never stood out much, was never the team leader. He had just moved through life up until this point, following the crowd usually. Now the time was coming when he had to lead, and he hoped he was up for it. Leo liked to be needed, and he did not want the people that counted on him to be let down. One more mile down, at least as what Yoshida had just announced. 7 miles out from the ship, they had never run this far without the ship at least being in sight at this point. They would probably not be able to do Leo's favorite part of the morning fitness program, which was sparring. Leo had never gotten into a fight in his entire life. Well, in his life up until the Outfitters had snatched him. Now Leo had what Yoshida said was an equivalent skill of a black belt in karate and a high degree of skill in a few other martial arts. Yoshida should know. After all, the man was raised in a family that taught martial arts for a living in Japan and Europe. This was one area where Captain De Clooney was a stickler for discipline, physical training. The man came around every couple of days to see how Leo was doing and to see if some of the strict training regimes that were being instituted, running, calisthenics, and most importantly, the martial arts. De Clooney stressed that every man must maintain the skills the Outfitters had given him, because without training, the proficiency level the fleet woke up with printed on their brains would quickly erode, especially if a person was inactive. Leo had put Yoshida in charge of physical training due mostly to Yoshi's prior experience. So the crew was up every morning at the crack of dawn, out in front of the ship, sweating, groaning, and moaning under the dictatorship of Yoshida the Torturer. Yoshida had started everyone out on the basics of karate. Stances, blocks, and some punches. After sweating these out for 2 weeks, he moved up to some basic kicks and more advanced punches. Then there were katas, which Yoshida explained were a set of preset fighting moves that were used to develop timing, breathing, patience, and concentration. Finally, after about a month and a half of training, Yoshida let them spar. This had been the most fun and most painful part of the training. Leo learned that fighting was a lot like driving a hover cycle. If you weren't paying complete attention, both would smack you around until you were focused on what you were doing. Luckily, Leo was a fast learner. He stopped listening to everything else when he was fighting. He stopped worrying about everyone else. He stopped pondering all the possibilities and concentrating on keeping his face from getting rearranged. To say the least, sparring was a bittersweet escape from the responsibilities of keeping the crew on the training schedule. Luckily, today was Sunday, which was designated by the Admiral as a minimal training day, and since the liftoff was in 2 days and tomorrow would be packed full with last-minute checks and securing the ship, De Clooney had decided to give each crew a day off, at least a day of less scheduled activity than normal. Good thing, because this run would have put them way behind schedule. Leo was sometimes sorry, like now. He had given Yoshi the task of getting and keeping the crew in shape, and so things progressed, and the run continued. Yoshi called for the formation to go to half speed, and they started to catch their collective breaths. They were starting to come to the top of another hill, and Leo guessed that as soon as they reached the top, they would turn around and run back. But Yoshi had another surprise for everyone as they reached the top of the rise. They looked down into the next small valley, and at the bottom of the hill were the ground vehicles from the ship. Their robots were also down there, and from the smell of things, breakfast was ready. Yoshi gave the command for the crew to go to a walk, and they made their way down to the vehicles, which were parked in a rough semicircle. As the crew reached the area where the vehicles were parked, Yoshi directed them to the area around the food. "I hope you don't mind the surprise, Cap, but I thought it'd be a nice change of pace," Yoshi said apologetically. "No, not at all. Heck, I'm just glad we did not have to run back," Leo said, putting his Japanese first officer at ease with a wave of a hand. The group halted, then Yoshi gave the command to fall out. The group just milled about, stretching out, winding down. "Well, it'll take a few minutes till the food is ready. Do you want to talk? Put out some information to the crew?" Yoshi asked. Leo nodded, then climbed on top of the tank and turned to face the majority of the guys. The crew circled. Leo motioned for them to sit, and they gave him their attention. "Well, crew of the Long Range Recon Ship 12, 2nd Squadron, this is our final training run here on Sanctuary. And let me tell you, this is the best so far, at least the longest to the middle of nowhere," Leo said, gesturing around the big open space. This got a few laughs from the crew. "But now I'd like to publicly thank the man that has brought us to his fine outdoor cafe, and also gotten us into the best shape that we've ever been in our lives, Lieutenant Yoshida Burgai." There were applause, and a few sarcastic, "Thank you, Lieutenants." Yoshi turned and took a bow, and then threw some oranges and apples at the sarcastic ones. Leo continued, "Well, the day is finally here. We've gotten through the last run with the Master of Pain, Lieutenant Burgai." That got an enthusiastic cheer from the crew, and most notably from the Chief Engineer, who had struggled with the long runs. "That does not mean the physical training is over," Leo stopped for effect. "As you know, there are some programs that let you experience different situations in our holographic alcove, and I expect those programs to be used on a regular basis by everyone to stay in shape once we hit space. There will be a schedule put out to everyone, and I personally will be talking to Larry to determine if you are meeting a schedule of prescribed types of exercises." The holographic alcove was, in Leo's mind, the neatest thing on the ship. It was a small alcove on the crew deck that allowed a person to program in different scenarios such as rock climbing or weightlifting or running course, and a person could then do that exercise with the full extent of the three walled areas. On the larger ships like the Recon Support Frigate, they had entire rooms for holographic programs. Leo had been introduced to a few of these by Chief Faith Westlock, whom he had looked up every time he went over to the big ship for a meeting with Captain DeClooney. The last comment got a small moan from the crew, but it was a good-natured than anything else. Leo continued, "We'll be having inter-ship competitions as well around December to find some champ to go into fleet competition for shooting and fighting." This last bit came down from the fleet command with the Admiral's signature on it. Leo did not think there would really be time for competition, but if the Admiral wanted it, the Admiral would get it. "The rules and classes will be posted on the ship's bulletin board. Just ask Larry or Winchester about them. Now then, on to more serious issues. The ship taking off the day after tomorrow." The crew perked up instantly, and some of the younger guys even leaned forward. "At 1200 hours the day after tomorrow, the ship will leave this planet's surface and move into position around the fifth moon of the sixth planet of this system. From there, we will all begin, you guessed it, more drills." A large moan escaped from the crew, and Leo was not sure that this one was all in jest from most of the guys. Leo waited for the moaning to die down before the next piece of news. "Since we will be spending the rest of our time in her, I think now would be a good time to name the ship." This bit of news did not get much of a response from the crew. Leo had to admit when Yoshi had brought up this idea to him last night, he thought it was kind of lame. But Yoshi was so excited about it, Leo did not want to burst his bubble. Yoshi had some trouble relating to most of the crew, so when he got excited about something, Leo did not want to squash his enthusiasm. Leo noticed that Gonzalez had his hand up. Leo motioned for Sergeant Gonzalez to ask away. Sir, I'm a bit confused. I thought the ship already had a name, Larry." Leo was about to tell Gonzalez that Larry was the ship's computer, but he got cut off. "Well, Sergeant Gonzalez, my name is Larry, but the ship is just where I live," the voice came from the cycles which were parked nearby. "I was just about to explain that, Larry," Leo said, with a bit of frustration. "Let the box talk, boss," Packer said, joshing around. The rest of the crew backed Packer. Leo could sense a losing battle, so he let it go. "Okay, okay. Larry, let it rip," Leo said, waving his hand. "Well, the ship is my home, like it is yours. I think that it should have a name that complements it," Larry said. "Maybe the name of a bird, or animal, or a force of nature, like a tornado. But then this has to be decided by the whole crew," Yoshi said in a calm voice. "Because when I go out and beat the snot out of the rest of the fleet in the unarmed fighting competition, I want everyone to know what ship I come from. And what makes you think that you will be representing the ship in a hand-to-hand tournament?" Fia said, standing up. The crew let out a low rumbling at the implied challenge. Been some talk in the lounge of what would happen if these two went head-to-head and about. Leo already knew that the issue had been settled late one night, but Leo could tell that Fia was kidding around, and Yoshi looked like he was ready to have some fun. "Well, Chief Engineer, since I am the best fighter in the crew, I thought it'd be apparent to everyone, even a grease monkey like you," Yoshi said, answering the challenge. "Grease monkey, eh? Well, I think now would be a good time to let the wind out of you," Fia said. The crew cleared back, grabbing seats on nearby vehicles. Fia strode to the center of the circle. Yoshi looked at Leah, who nodded, and they both went to the center of the improvised ring. Winchester, as if expecting the fight, came forward with mouthpieces, groin protection, padded gloves, and foot protection. Both men slipped the gear on, the latter of which was more to prevent cuts and scrapes and to lessen the force of the blows. Leah looked at both of the guys, and they nodded they were ready to begin. Okay, guys, let us follow the ship's rules. When one guy asks for quarter, the other gives it. Remember, gentlemen, we are going to space in 2 days, and I need everyone at 100%, Leo admonished. Fia and Yoshi both nodded, then dropped down into fighting stances. Leo stepped back and raised his hand. Ready? Hi, Yoshi said. Ready, Fia said, never taking his eyes off Yoshi. Leo checked him once again, dropped his hand, and said loudly, Begin. The fight was on. The fleet tournament rules called for rounds of 3 minutes apiece, 5 rounds total, but Yoshi had abolished those rules while training the crew. No breaks, no time limits, and no rules, except that no one was allowed to use a crippling or killing attack in practice at full force. Yoshi had stressed again and again that there were no rules and no time limits philosophy. There were no rules in combat, and no time limits, no breaks. Yoshi and Fia circled each other for a while, not making any menacing movements. These two had watched each other fight before, and they waited for an opening they knew was coming. Yoshi was definitely the more skilled fighter, but what Fia lacked in expertise, he made up for in strength and ability to take abusing blows. Yoshi was also lightning fast. Before Fia realized what the first strike was, Yoshi had hit him with 2 roundhouse kicks to the head. Did not really faze him, though. He just shook it off. Fia lunged at Yoshi and threw a series of punches. Only one landed, though. The single punch he took did faze Yoshi momentarily, but he just danced away from Fia. Fia pulled back himself and waited for his opponent to come back to him. Yoshi moved towards him a little bit, more wary of the other's strength. Yoshi moved in quick, and after he feinted a kick to the stomach, he caught Fia 3 more times to the head and once to the stomach with fast, lightning-like hand strikes. Yoshi did not leave the big man's reach unharmed, though. Fia landed a solid blow to Yoshi's temple with a back fist. Yoshi staggered back, as did Fia. They closed again this time, and each threw a flurry of blows. Leo lost track of the exchange that lasted a second or two, no longer. Each contestant separated away from each other. Yoshi's nose was bleeding, and Fia's eyes showed that he was going to have yet another nice shiner. The battle was wearing on, and both guys were looking tired. Yoshi and Fia nodded to each other and moved towards each other again. Fia began this engagement with a low kick followed up with one to the stomach area. Yoshi caught his second kick and pulled Fia towards him with one hand. The other hand began to rain blows down on his head and chest region. Then Yoshi did something that Leo had fallen victim to a few times. He reached out with his trail leg and swept Fia's remaining leg out from underneath him, and at the same time he lifted Fia's leg up in the air, and the end result being Fia going straight back. Yoshi followed him down and trapped him on the ground. Fia landed and tried to get back up, but found himself trapped underneath the tall Japanese first officer, leaning over him as he held his fist about an inch from Fia's nose. Fia struggled for a few minutes, then smiled. Yoshi's fist opened up, and he got off Fia, then helped him up. Once both of them had stood up, Fia reached and shook his hands with Yoshi, and then raised the other's hand in the air. The winner and champion of Recon Ship 12, First Mate Yoshida Burgai, Fia announced. The first one to stand was Packer. 3 cheers for the lieutenant. Hip hip hooray! Leo joined in immediately, and on the second hooray, almost everyone had joined in. By the third one, the whole crew was on its feet cheering. The cheering died down, and everyone converged on the two men, started pounding them on the back. Leo looked over to Winchester and asked, Is the food ready yet? The robot nodded back in the affirmative. Leo caught everyone's attention with his next announcement. All right now, we have our champion, so let us eat. The food is getting cold. With that, a line immediately formed near the food. Leo hung back for a second, as did the rest of the officers. There were some quiet congratulations and pats on the back by the officers while they waited for the line to subside. Leo was the last one in line, as customary, in order to make sure everyone had enough to eat, which was not a problem now, but he had been told by Captain De Clooney that food might not always be plentiful on the voyage home. As the crew sat down, Leo gathered up a tray and a large glass of juice. He looked around to find a good spot to eat. He noted one, walked over to the hovercraft, and grabbed a spot near Yoshi and Gonzalez and dug in. After a few minutes of eating, Gonzalez spoke up. Leo, when do we take off again? Well, I've got a meeting tonight with Captain De Clooney, but according to the last word I heard, 1,200 hours on the day after tomorrow, Leo answered. And are you going to see Faith while you're over there too, boss? Yoshi asked, winking. That is not any of your business, First Mate, Leo said with a smirk. Yoshi and him had talked a lot about Faith while they were alone, but Leo had never discussed it in front of the crew, and he thought it was an unspoken rule to never discuss her in front of the crew. He guessed now that they should have spoken about the rule. Gonzalez got a chuckle out of him, and so did the few of the other guys within earshot. The rest of the crew knew that every time Leo went over to the frigate, he saw Faith. They knew this because they themselves had met a few girls over at the frigate, and they informed on him. Leo really did not care whether the crew knew or not. He just did not want anyone to make a big deal of it. The reason I asked Captain was because I think maybe we should have a bit of a prayer before we begin our journey, and I was wondering if I could have a few minutes of everyone's time beforehand. Sergeant Gonzalez, that is an excellent idea. You've got 15 minutes before takeoff. I will look on the schedule and double-check the time, okay? That would be more than enough, Captain. Thanks. Leo finished eating. By that time, most of the crew was already cleaning up and taking the initiative, getting themselves and their vehicles ready for the movement back to the ship. Leo finished his food, and Flavius came along and took his tray. He grabbed his pack that Winchester had brought along, slipped a pair of pants on, strapped his gun on, and adjusted the rest of his gear. By this time, everyone had gotten into their assigned positions and were ready to move out. Leo climbed up onto the tank commander's area next to Yoshi. Leo punched his ID code into the console in front of him and plugged in his comm panel that Winchester had also packed. Leo looked over the situation. Everyone was in their assigned positions. Winchester behind him, Yoshi to his left, and everyone else in their assigned positions. Yoshi looked over to Leo. Ready to move, Captain? What formation do you want to take back to the ship? This is one of Leo's favorite things to do so far, ground movements. Leo made a quick decision, one in which he knew the crew would enjoy. The V formation, with rotating scouts. Yoshi punched in the code with a smile on his face. The crew loved this formation because the guys on the cycles took turns raging far and close from the tank at breakneck speeds. Speed for the main formation, Captain? Yoshi asked, going down the checklist. Top speed, but let's not burn out the lifters this time. Tell Abe to watch the temperature gauge, Leo said, remembering one time the crew was out for a spin. They had burned out the thrusters, which had taken Fia and Flavius a night to replace, and had gotten a chewing out from declooning. Yoshi punched the information in and continued. Route back to the ship, Captain? Leo punched in the route on his own comm panel. He plugged in a route that would take them on an hour-long tour with four checkpoints, one around the recon frigate, and eventually around the squadron commander ship. Leo punched the send button and sent the route to all the crew members. Any further instructions, Captain? Yoshi asked, noting the route Leo chose. Leo activated his comm panel, getting a public address channel. Keep it tight, and gunners, keep those weapons in your assigned areas. Cycles, keep it moving and stay tight when you move into the wing positions. The gunners on the tank had acknowledged, and then the cyclists acknowledged that they had received the word. All right, everyone, move out, Leo called over the comm net. The tank started to lift off the ground, move forward, slowly spinning around so it was pointed in the general direction of the first checkpoint. The cycles sped off in pairs. Leo loved having the whole crew work together like this, and hoped it meant they would work together well once the ship was in space. The tank picked up speed slowly, but was soon moving along at almost top speed. The bikes were only going about three-quarters of their full speed, except for the rotating scouts. They were accelerating away from the formation with all they had. Almost everyone loved to ride the bikes, even Leo. There was a few exceptions, though. Yoshi liked the tank for its strategic position, while Finucci and Gonzalez liked it because they were in gunner's positions. Abraham loved driving the tank because it reminded him of being back in Israel. So most of the crew was happy. He rotated guys in the bike and the tank as often as he could. Leo tried to get the whole crew out for at least 3 times a week for full movement, and at night whenever possible. He had been reading up on his tactical training tutor, and decided to make things as difficult as possible whenever possible. Because, like the U.S. Navy SEAL once said, the more you bleed in peacetime, the less you bleed in war. Or something to that effect. So Leo believed in moving at night to get the guys used to working in adverse conditions. Leo checked his display once again. The formation was holding its pattern very well, and they had just passed their first checkpoint and were headed towards the frigate. The route took them around the far end of the frigate and then away from it. Leo knew that as soon as the large formation was noted, right about now, Leo knew de Clooney would be told of the passing formation. Even though it was still early, Leo knew the senior captain would be awake. In fact, Leo was not sure the man ever slept. It seemed like he was up all the time. The communications light blinked on, and Leo knew before he answered it, Captain de Clooney was paying attention. Leo activated the visual channel and looked down at the screen. Good morning, Captain Grant, de Clooney said with his twisted smile. Good morning, sir, Leo replied, wondering what that smile meant. Out for a little cruise this morning? Yes, sir. We ran about 7 miles, then picked up our vehicles. I see. Well, don't burn anything out. I have been looking over your maintenance reports, and I'm not crazy about the numbers. Well, sir, we've got to train, and even when we break things, that is training, because we need to learn how to fix our equipment, Leo said defensively and loudly over the wind rushing by. De Clooney looked down at his computer screen once more. Right you are, Captain, but let us not trade off too much of one training for another. Agreed? Yes, sir, Leo said, and felt the pressure lift off his shoulders. Okay, tell your men to take it easy. I'll see you over here at 1800 hours sharp. De Clooney out. The screen went blank, and Leo looked up at Yoshi, who had watched the entire exchange. Well, isn't that special? Leo said, mimicking something he had heard 100 years ago. Same route, Leo. Or do you want to cut it short? Yoshi asked. Same route, Let's just keep an eye on the equipment. They were just coming to the top of the next rise. Leah had been on top of this rise only twice before, and once was at night. The tank moved along the top of the rise, keeping on to the course Leah had plotted. Leah wanted to get one final look at the huge ship that in a few days would rise off the planet and never again be in the atmosphere. The ship was huge, at least a mile and a half long, and at its widest point, a half mile. The ship had just one major tower that reached about a mile off the ground. The ship was cylindrical in shape, and its most prominent figure was the huge gun barrel that ran through the center and opened at the prow. Leo knew from studying the schematics of the ship that the huge gun was also part of the engines, and they shared the same power source, which was buried deep in the bowels of the ship. The ship looked to Leo like one of the battleships from World War II, having numerous smaller gun turrets protruding from all angles for defense and offense. But the huge gun just awed Leo. It could be used for ship-to-ship battles or even orbital bombardment of enemy planets. Even though this commander's ship had this immense gun, it was still not the biggest one in the fleet. The biggest one was the Admiral's command ship. In addition, each squadron had a smaller version of the commander's ship that was at the disposal of the squadron commander. Even more impressive than the huge gun was the ship carried as much firepower as the rest of the squadron. For example, the squadron had one fighter launcher ship with 200 single-man fighters assigned to it, while the squadron commander ship also had 200 single-man fighters as well, and so on down the line, duplicating each ship in the squadron, except, Leo thought with a bit of pride, the recon support frigate, which was the only ship the squadron's commander did not duplicate. It made Leo feel kind of unique. As the formation circled the giant ship, Leo watched some of the activities going on around it. There were numerous hovercraft circling the ship. There were personnel on what appeared to be window washing rigs going over the surface of the ship, and some of the ship-to-ship gun emplacements mounted along the exterior of the ship were going through their rotations. Beep, beep. The passive sensors on the tank had picked up something. Leo punched the controls for more information. A screen lit up and showed Leo that one of the large gun emplacements was trained on the tank. Leo ran a more extensive scan on the emplacement that was coming up on the left. The emplacement was not powered up, at least not the weapon section. Its scanners and motion control were only operating at 25% power. Leo showed the screen to Yoshi, who noted it. Leo made a quick announcement to the crew and the formation slowed down. Leo noticed that the gun emplacement continued to track them, but the power from his scanner had gone up to 50%. Leo started to count down from 10. At the 1 count, Leo and Yoshi grabbed tight to the closest handrails as the tank made a sudden turn to the left and headed straight towards the gun emplacement. They went towards the ship at half speed, and when Leo noted that the big gun emplacement had zeroed back on them, he had the formation make a sharp right so that they're now heading back in their original direction. All during their headlong rush towards the huge ship, Leo had heard shouts. Leo gave his next command to the ship, go. The hovercraft and the cycles shot ahead at full power. The crew gave a big cheer and saluted the gun emplacement with several types of derogatory hand motions. Leo quickly ran the scanners back towards the gun emplacement one more time and checked it out. The scanner power on the huge multi-barreled weapon was turned up to 100%, and they were still being tracked. The tank sped along the top of the rise and moved to the rear position of the ship, circled it near its engines, and made its way back to the point where they initially crested the rise. As they went back to the slope and towards their ship, Leo enjoyed the sense of teamwork the crew had just shown. He was proud. Leo watched the formation and smiled to himself.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Scouts Out by A.A. Foringer, as read by the author. This audio production, copyright 2015, all rights reserved. A new episode of Scouts Out is released every Saturday. To get an ebook version of this story, go to smashwords.com, where you can find other stories in the Outfitters universe. The story you have just listened to may contain slight variations from the original text due to translation from written word to spoken word, but overall, the story has not been changed. To contact Aaron, visit his blog at aaforinger.com or email him at aaforinger@gmail.com. He is also on Twitter as aaforinger. He craves your feedback, so get to the comm link of your choice and commence with the typing.